I think we're going to get started. Good morning, everyone. Welcome. My name is Jenna Gianelli. I work with Eric Selle, our head high-yield auto analyst. Our next presentation is coming from members of Ford management team. To my left, we have Neil Schloss, treasurer, and Michael Sineski, CFO of Ford Credit. And in the back, we have head of investor relations, Sean Ryan. So if you have any questions, you can always follow up with him. Thanks for so much for being here, and I'll pass it over to you guys.
Great, thanks, Jen. Well, good morning, everyone, and I appreciate the opportunity, Mike and I both, to be here to give you an update on Ford. And we're going to focus most of the presentation on looking forward. Although I like to start with, and we're going to test technology a little bit here, but I like to start with a video that we actually used for our senior leadership meeting, where we brought the top 300. Executives around the world once a year to a leadership meeting. And we started that meeting off with just a year of review of 2010 and all the accomplishments that as a company we achieved in 2010. And after seeing that, I said, what a perfect way to start our meeting here today. So, Sean, I'm going to ask you if you can start that video.
Monday, winning both the 2010 North American Car and Truck of the Year awards.
The 2011 Explorer got a multi-city rollout in places like Chicago, where it will be built.
It's just absolutely incredible what we have done together.
First time in history, Ford Motor Company in Canada is the number one manufacturer in Canada.
Today is the next step in our electric vehicle program. We're announcing an additional $450 million investment in Michigan.
Thank you.
So a lot happening, or a lot did happen in 2010 as far as our accomplishments. Before I leave 2010, let me just briefly touch upon our fourth quarter and full year results. In the fourth quarter, we had $1.3 billion of profits, $741 million in the automotive segment, and $552 million in the financial services segment, and full year pre-tax operating profit of $8.3 billion, $5.3 billion on the automotive side, and $3 billion in financial services. Full year results by operation on the automotive side of $5.3 billion. All of our automotive operations were profitable, with exception to my balance sheet and the debt side, which had an interest expense of about $1.6 billion. And then the year-over-year, and this is obviously a slide that got a lot of attention at the end of the fourth quarter, a year-over-year improvement of $7.2 billion. The key drivers on the upside are industry, share, and product mix. Product pricing continues to be a big plus for us, and the offset associated with costs, both structural and commodities, with some material savings and efficiency offsets to that. So that's a real quick look at 2010. I'd like to really focus the rest of the deck on going forward and really focus on our four pillars of our strategy, which you've seen before, and I'll remind you again several times as we go through the presentation, but also focus on growth, which is obviously a big initiative for us as we try to grow around the world, not only in the North American and European markets where there's a lot of growth potential, but also in a lot of the emerging markets. As we look on this slide, really highlights our economic view. And what's not on this slide is the near-term impact of what's going on in the Middle East and North Africa. We're obviously watching that very closely. We don't think at this point that it has a material impact on what our views are on the economy, but obviously that's going to change. Our view for the global economy is to grow at 3 to 4% in 2011. Obviously, some of the markets are going to grow more than others. We think the U.S. economy is going to approach a 4% growth. Canada, Brazil, and the Asian growth will continue. Europe is a little bit more mixed, and again, it's a country by country where you have the U.K., Germany, and France doing pretty well, and then some of the other markets around the periphery are going to continue to struggle as they have budget cuts and other austerity actions. The key takeaway from the growth in 11 and our expectations for 11, and the next slide we'll go through the industry-specific data, is that the global economy is growing, and there are several markets where income levels, especially in the emerging markets, are really getting to a point where they start to get into a takeoff stage where they're high enough level to where it really facilitates their ability to purchase cars. As we look at the industry volume for the industry globally, in the U.S., we're expecting industry to be in the 13 to 13.5 million unit level. In Europe, at 14.5 to 15.5, and that compares to 15.3 in 2010, so down a little bit. And I think this reflects a lot of what's going on in some of the markets in Europe. Globally, we're expecting the industry to be in the 75 to 85 million units. And given the strength we saw in the fourth quarter, the full year 2010 was at 74 million. So our present guidance for the global market is to be somewhere in the middle of the 75 to 85 range, which would set a record from a global industry perspective. The One Ford plan is really a plan that has been in place now for 4 years. It is unchanged. It's going to stay unchanged, and is really focused on the 4 points that are mentioned on this slide, to aggressively restructure the business. And this really reflects some of the things that we're experiencing today. As demand shifts change and as oil prices change, we're going to continue to right-size demand to where customers want the vehicles to be. Second is to accelerate development of new products our customers want and value, and we'll spend a decent amount of time this morning talking about really what's key to our business, which is the product. Finance our plan and improve our balance sheet. We'll talk a little bit about the progress we're making there. And then importantly, working together effectively as one team. And I think importantly with this four pillars of our strategy is they are unchanged. We're continuing to stay focused. We're not losing any kind of strength or momentum as far as our ability to execute against this plan. So let me start first with the first objective of restructuring the business and some of the highlights that we've taken since 2005. The first is we continue to reduce the number of global platforms and the number of global nameplates. At the beginning, we had 97 different name nameplates, and we've obviously sold several brands in the process, and we're getting that number down to our longer-term target. We've reduced structural costs by $13 billion. We've taken, by the end of this year, we'll have taken 40% capacity out. We've reduced our U.S. salaried and hourly headcount by 48%. We're becoming more and more efficient in the way our manufacturing is competitive, and that's particularly helpful given our good relationships that we have with our unions around the world. And then we continue to restructure our Asia-Pacific region and actually moved our central headquarters of the Asia-Pacific into Shanghai, and obviously the largest car market in the world. Accelerate our development of new products, and we'll spend a lot more time on this element of the pillar because it is critically important as we go forward. On the product strategy side, it accelerates the new products, and that's the key thing, that during the recession, we did not cut back on our product spending. We were able to continue to invest in our product, and you're seeing the fruits of that now with the new products that we have between the Fiesta the middle of last year, the Focus coming out now, and the Explorer, which launched in December. We've divested the brands, obviously, Jag Land Rover a few years ago, most recently Volvo, and we've stopped production of the Mercury brand. We have a much more balanced portfolio of small, medium, and large cars, utilities, and trucks, and that really positions us in a much better position today if fuel prices were to shoot up from a standpoint of consumer preferences moving downsize in vehicles, not only in vehicles, but also in the powertrains that go with those. We continue to get more efficient in our engineering and investment, leveraging our global assets around the world, and that plays a big role in the standpoint of bringing the one Ford product to all of our markets, being able to take the Fiesta and not only have it in Europe but have it here, launching it in China and other markets around the world. I mentioned the reduction in vehicle platforms, and that really plays not only in the vehicle side but importantly in the engine and transmissions, and really reduces the level of complexity in our overall business. And it was the goal is to continue to reduce the average age of our showroom, and it's best in class today, and we plan to keep it there. The four pillars on the product strategy, and this I'm sure a lot of you have seen before, which is quality leadership, fuel efficiency leadership, leadership in safety, and importantly, leadership in smart technology. And what best way to show how those four pillars work into our C1 strategy. And this is actually what the show looked like in Detroit for any of you who are at the North American Auto Show when our press conference is showing the 10 vehicle top hats on our C1 platform, which is the new Focus that is coming out now. And importantly, three of the vehicles, the C-Max Hybrid, the Focus Battery, and the C-Max plug-in are all going to be electrification. I'll spend more time on that in a little bit about how our strategy of electrification fits in with our overall product strategy. But importantly, with this product, what we find is the scalability when you do this is pretty significant, and that's where you get really efficiency, not only in the commonality of parts around the world, and the Focus will have an 80% by volume part commonality. It'll be manufactured in five different locations around the world, all using the same assembly processes. And so you get the economies of assembly, you get the economies of the buy, and the economies of designing a vehicle once. And an example in North America is what the previous model was 200,000, we'll be able to do 850,000 on a similar platform and top hat. And this is where I was mentioned, there's five different locations in which the Focus will be manufactured. Wayne, Michigan, obviously, St. Petersburg, Russia, in Germany, and then our two new plants in 2012 in Chongqing, China, and Rayong, Thailand. The second pillar of drive quality is important, and this is just an example of how the Focus will score relative to its competitors in highway wind noise. And you can see considerable differences between not only cars within its class, but also in the luxury side as well. On Drive Green, an example of how we've improved the powertrains in the base vehicles and where the Focus sits from a standpoint of highway and city miles relative to its competition. On the safe side, and unfortunately this is a little hard to read from a distance. We tried to get as much on here as we possibly could. You can see how the Focus lines up with the Audi 3 from the standpoint of some of the safe features that will be in the vehicles. A lot on crash avoidance and safety from a standpoint of blind spot mirrors, et cetera. Many more items within the Ford Focus than versus our competitors, not only in competitors in the mass producers, but also on the luxury side. Some of the smart technology, and this is obviously the picture of the dash, and you can see some of the technologies listed on the side from a standpoint of My Ford Touch, which is a phenomenal piece of instrument panel from a standpoint of everything voice activated, from the standpoint of making sure you can keep your hands on the wheels and eyes on the road. From Active Park Assist, the Ford Sync, My Key, which allows you to program the vehicle from a standpoint of how hot, and this is great for kids, how fast the vehicle can go, how loud the radio can go. Don't tell your kids that, but this is a feature that obviously is one that we think is really adds to the overall safety of the vehicle. On the electrification side, and these are the three top hats I showed you as part of the 10, and I think importantly here, in order to make this technology work as an industry, you have to get the economies of scale associated with the cost side right. And we think the electrification of a platform is a much better strategy than the electrification of a single unit from a single manufacturer. The third pillar, finance our plan and improve our balance sheet. Obviously, we've made a lot of accomplishments or have done a lot to improve this over the last couple years. First and foremost is the business generating positive cash flow, going from a negative $19.6 billion in 2008 to a positive $4.4 billion in 2010. In 2010, we reduced debt by $14.5 billion, and with the present plan on the trust preferred, which has been called, we would expect to reduce debt another $3 billion. We ended 2010 with $27.9 billion of liquidity and ended the year with a net cash position of $1.4 billion. We also said at year end, and the 10-K was filed this morning, we will reiterate our expectation that given our present planning assumptions, that in our worldwide pension funded status will be fully funded in the next few years. Obviously, that will differ from plan to plan. We ended 2010 with an $11.5 billion shortfall, but with our expectations from a standpoint of interest rates, we've also disclosed in our 10-K this morning that our planned contributions to the pension fund will be $1.6 billion. For 2010, that's up from 1.4 billion. I'm sorry, in 2011, up from 1.4 billion in 2010. So continue to make progress. More to go, but again, significant progress in the overall balance sheet. And here you can see on the left side the debt reduction from 33.6 billion at the end of 2009 down 14.5 to the 19.1, and then we pro forma the year end 2010 for the trust preferred, the $3 billion call. And at the same time, we improved overall automotive liquidity, growing liquidity from $25.6 billion at the end of 2009 to $27.9 billion in 2010. And last of the four pillars of our strategy is to work together effectively as one team. This is a great slide from the standpoint of how the teams work together, and you can see the business units across the top and the functional organizations along the stub. And this is actually how we work on a day-to-day basis. We meet continuously as a leadership team. All the representation from both function and organizations are there. We're talking about the business. We're talking about what's new, what's hot, what has to be done. They're very transparent. They're very data-driven. And we're dealing with the reality of the business real-time. And this process has been around now for several years. It's working. Everybody's engaged in it. And I tend to believe that this is one of the key reasons why the culture at Ford has changed and one that will continue as we continue to operate within that structure. But the working together goes beyond just what's going on internally. We can also see it in a lot of the survey results of the external environment and other areas of where working together plays a key role. Obviously, our dealer relationships have improved, and the recent NADA survey has us scoring all high marks on 9 out of 12 categories. Employee satisfaction about where the company is going is 90% favorable. On the supplier side, where we used to be the worst, we scored the best of three of the four quarters in the UBS survey. And the corporate reputation surveys that are done, we've shown continued improvement and now is recognized as the number one automotive brand in the U.S. So working together is beyond just what's going on inside the company, but how we treat our partners externally. I'd like to now move to growth. And importantly, the slide at the bottom is really sort of summarizes our growth strategy as we go forward. The left circle being a more geographic-based split of vehicles, not only from a profitability perspective, but revenue. A much more balanced approach to small, medium, and large cars, along with what we're doing to leverage our global brand and our global capacity and our One Ford products around the world, really is what will create the long-term value of the business. And growth does not mean we're going to just North America and Europe become sort of a secondary. Growth really is in all the markets we're in. There's significant growth possibility as the industries both grow back to more normal trend in North America and in Europe, but also with the product cadence that we have, we will continue to invest in product to bring the best cars and trucks to the North America and European market. We're going to participate in the industry recoveries. We've got some brand work to do, continue to improve our brand. The reputation's getting better. It's great in North America. We need to do some work in other markets around the world. And as you saw last week with our announcement of our Russia joint venture with Solars, we're going to continue to grow in Eastern Europe and Russia. Some of the North America product launches that we've had, the Fiesta in the upper left was launched in June of last year, has done really well. The media has been great. We're getting into markets, California in particular, that we really haven't shown well in. The Fiesta is doing best in the LA region versus any other region around the U.S. The Focus four-door in the upper middle is what's being launched right now. It's going to be launched in the four- and five-door here, and in Europe, I'll get to in a second, will be the four, the five-door, as well as the wagon. The bottom middle is the Explorer, which is an all-new vehicle that came out in December of last year, and we cannot keep this in stock. I mean, this is selling is their fastest turn at any vehicle we have from the standpoint of the vehicle sales. And then the Mustang, the Edge, and the Super Duty, all new last year, not only the vehicle, but also in the case of the Super Duty and the Mustang, much more fuel-efficient powertrains. And for those of you who haven't seen much of the Explorer, let me show you at least one ad.
Introducing the all-new Ford Explorer. Drive one.
As we get into Europe, and this is the other product lines, I think from the standpoint of Europe, there has been a lot of discussion about what is it going to take to get Europe better, and I think first and foremost it's product. The Galaxy, the S-Max, and the Mondeo were all new at the sort of middle to end of last year, which is our CD platform. The C-Max is also new, and then the Grand C-Max, and then the Focus you're going to get to is being launched right now. And hopefully we have a couple of very short commercials ready to go. I was asked to talk a little longer between this slide, so.
To save fuel, it makes itself more aerodynamic by automatically closing its grill vents, leaving you breathless. The all-new Ford Focus with active grille shutters. To increase fuel efficiency, its profile is sculpted for optimal aerodynamics. It's wind-resistant in an irresistible sort of way. The all-new Ford Focus.
There are 12 more just like that that will be airing over the next couple weeks in Europe, and then once the vehicle gets shipped here, we'll start airing them here as well. So moving around the world, moving to South America, I think the strategy is very much focused on modernizing our plants, expanding production, and bringing the global One Ford product into Brazil and the rest of the South American region. Some of the things we've done already is we've committed to $2.4 billion of investments into Brazil over the next 5 years to modernize our plants and to expand the product and production in the region. We put $250 million investment into our Argentina plant. The Global Fiesta, which is the first of the global products, was introduced in the South America region in September of last year. And the bottom of the slide is the EcoSport, which is the B-class or the B-size sport utility, which really we created the market for with the EcoSport, and we will continue to keep that current as we go forward. Asia, Pacific, and Africa, obviously the fastest automotive market in the world. The key here also will be developing and bringing in the global products. As capacity comes online, bringing in the global products. We are investing, and some of the cost increases that you saw in the fourth quarter were in relationship to the growth that we're doing in this region. We've established regional centers of excellence, where there'll be a manufacturer, there'll be a PD, a product development lead, in the markets that own the vehicle, and then they'll transport the vehicle. And we'll have more than 50 new vehicles and powertrains in this region by 2015. Specifically within China, it's obviously the largest market in the world, and one that is going to continue to grow. We've launched the new assembly plant in 2009 in Nanjing with our partners to build the Fiesta. We've launched the Edge in China in 2010. Also with our partners, we've announced a $490 million assembly plant in Chongqing, which will produce the Ford Focus in 2012. We've announced our plans with our partners also for a $500 million engine plant in Chongqing, which will more than double our engine capacity. And importantly, it's not just about product, but you have to have a distribution chain to be able to sell those products, and we continue to add dealers. We've added 100 dealers last year. For now, we have a total of 340 dealers online. But it's not only about China. There's other growth markets in Asia, India being probably the second largest one in the region, and we estimate will be the third largest auto market in the world by the end of the decade. We have completed an upgrade to our existing facility in Chennai, where we manufacture the Ford Figo. And for those who haven't seen the Figo, it's a small car. And that is our only new car we had there, and we went from a 1% share of the market to a 3% share of the market with one single vehicle. And that will now become exported. It's already exported into South Africa, and we will export it into 48 additional markets during 2011. We've committed to have 8 new vehicles by the middle of the decade. We're increasing the dealership body as similar to what we've done in China, and importantly, continuing to grow our local supply base. The rest of the region is centered around a lot of investments that we're making into Thailand for passenger car production in a joint venture with Mazda for the Fiesta and the Mazda 2. We're in the process of building a new plant with Mazda for the new pickup truck, which is the Ford Ranger, which will be a global product, global outside of the U.S. We'll go to about 180 markets around the world. And that vehicle was shown for the first time at the Australian International Show a year ago. We've also announced a $450 million assembly plant in Rayong, Thailand, which will produce the 2012 Focus. So this, again, when we take the Focus, it is here now. It's going to China and to the rest of the Asia-Pacific region in 2012. And as I said, the Figo is now being sold in 123 dealers in South Africa, produced in India. And with that, I will turn it over to Mike to talk about Ford Credit.
There are some seats up here for those that are in the back. All right, thanks. Okay, for Ford Credit, what we'll do is start off, talk a little bit about 2010, as Neil did. As most of you know, we earned $3.1 billion last year, up from $2 billion. Looking at the right box, our managed receivables at the end of the year were $83 billion, down from about $95 billion. Our charge-off performance was about $415 million, or a very low 47 basis points on a worldwide basis. Our allowance for credit losses was about $900 million, or only 1.02% of receivables, down from 1.61% in the previous year. You can see that we did about $2.5 billion of distributions last year, resulting in a leverage of about 6.7 to 1. For this year, 2011, we're planning about $2 billion of distributions. As Neil said, from a global business outlook from the credit company perspective, North America, things seem to be holding up pretty well. We're seeing people continuing to pay their bills, and the auction market and Manheim Used Index is at an all-time high. For Europe, it's a little uneven, a little stronger in Germany, and with other markets, we have a concern about how they will respond to the sovereign debt crisis. But at this stage, it seems favorable. Asia Pacific, it's all about growth. Latin America seems to be going well, but it's not without its concerns, particularly with what's happening in Brazil with its currency, and then who knows what's happening in Venezuela. As for the Middle East, we're obviously watching that very closely and what that impact could be as we head into the used car market. From a Ford Credit perspective, this chart really shows our strategy. And at the end of the day, being a financial services company, we need to be able to originate, buy product or buy the paper right, service it, collect it efficiently, and operate efficiently, and then be able to fund it. Not only be able to fund what's on our books, but to manage the balance sheet risk that goes along with that. Talking a little bit about what originations means for Ford Credit, we have a proprietary model that uses more than just a credit bureau score to help understand how we should buy paper, and we call that our probability of payment model. It's a POP. Basically, it's automotive specific. It has very large sample size, and it's built on a lot of history. And what it does, in essence, is it adds to the credit bureau data information about the financing product that a customer chooses, information about that customer, including their history with us, and information about the contract itself. From a servicing perspective, you know, at the end of the day, being a financial services company, we expect credit losses. If you don't have credit losses, you're probably not originating right. But at the end of the day, what you want is for those credit losses to perform within the expectation that you set for the business itself. So our goal, as we look at how we should service the business, is to make sure that we're reducing credit losses, you know, optimizing the utilization of our resources, and increasing customer satisfaction. And I know that sounds funny. How do you increase customer satisfaction as you're repoing somebody's vehicle? But we actually think we have a good plan for that. As we're servicing contracts, we actually have behavioral scorecards that we use that actually build upon the originations process that we use with that customer. So what we do is not only take the origination data, but we also continually update the credit bureau information, and we include in how the customer's performing, when they pay, how they pay. And based on that, we use this probability of default model to help us to figure out how we're going to deal with that customer. How, if they are late, how aggressively should we be able to go after them? And so, as you can see, we can better segment how we deal with customers and hopefully optimize customer satisfaction in the process. Looking at the results of our origination and servicing practices, you can see that we have maintained a very high quality of our portfolio. The upper left box shows our FICO scores through time, and the upper right box shows our worldwide loss to receivables ratio. As you can see, you know, we had a fundamental seed change in about 2004, consistent with our change in our FICOs. And where we're at in 2010 is back to near historic lows at about 50 basis points LTR. Bottom box shows our worldwide on-balance seat charge-offs and the allowance. And as you can see, our charge-offs are down to about $400 million. You know, about the lowest we've seen, and our reserve or allowance for credit losses is down to about $900 million. I want to talk a little bit more about the reserves because we've gotten a lot of questions about these with our year-end results and our guidance for 2011. Credit loss reserves basically are an estimate of the credit losses inherent in the portfolio. So you've got your actual charge-offs, the people that actually we had to repo a vehicle, and then you've got the assumption that there's still a lot more people like that in your portfolio. They just haven't defaulted yet, and that's what the reserves are supposed to reflect. So as you can see, in 2008, we had to increase reserves as our actual charge-offs and the actual environment deteriorated. But as we've gone through from 2008 to 2009 and 2010, and our charge-off performance has improved, so we have also released reserves for credit losses. And that's where you see kind of the profit improvement is in the change in the reserve. Well, at $900 million, we're at the lowest level of reserve we've really ever had. And at 1% of receivables, we really don't see an opportunity for us to have that go down much further. In fact, the guidance we've given is about 85 to 95 basis points for 2011. Here's some of the physicals that help drive the credit losses that you see on the books. You can see our repossessions are down to about 2.4%. Our severity, based on the strength in the used car market, has improved over $1,400 down to $6,900. And you can see our over 60-day delinquencies are an extraordinarily low 15 basis points, again, mirroring where we were back in 2004-05 level. Turning to lease, with lease, we had about 30,000 vehicles being returned to us. That's down about 6,000 from quarter four of 2009 and down about 9,000 from quarter three. You're going to start to see that come down a little bit because, as you know, the industry got smaller in 2008 and 2009, and also leasing was pulled back a little bit. The right-hand box shows our 36-month auction values. And I think what I'd say there is you can see how consistent it is. And, in fact, if you look at quarter four, to quarter four, we're actually up about $450 a unit year on year. So we've had very good results in the auction market for the vehicles that are coming back to us. I'd also like to point out that our investment in operating leases is down to about $10 billion from where you saw about $14.6 last year. Again, people have struggled a little bit with our guidance on residual losses, so I wanted to go a little further into that. Residual losses represent the difference between the actual auction value and what it's on your books at. In 2008, when the auction market and used values really plummeted, we had to take an impairment. And what we did is we had to write down the book value of a number of our vehicles at that time. And accounting rules say once you write it down through an impairment, you got to hold it at that level. Well, as we've gone through and you've seen what the used car market has done over the last couple of years, we're actually disposing of vehicles at a gain. And for those vehicles that were impaired, even more so of a gain. So this is what occurred in 2010 from the terminations that we had, 408,000, of which 125,000 were impaired vehicles. As we head into 2011, we're only going to have about 240,000 terminations, of which only 45,000 are impaired vehicles. So we're not going to have as large of a gain as we've had in the past. And we've said that's worth about $400 million, lower profit year over year. Finally, talking a little bit about funding. This shows our funding strategy. And as you can see, we ended the year with $83 billion of receivables. We had $15 billion of cash. And our securitized funding was about 52% of our managed receivables. What we've said for 2011 is we expect our receivables to be in the $80 to $85 billion range. And that our securitized funding should be in the range of 53 to 57%. However, we do expect that percentage to go down over the course of time as we're able to access, as we're able to get more unsecured term debt at increasingly favorable rates. So that's our guidance for 2011. Translating that into what it looks like from a funding plan perspective, we did $25 billion of funding in 2010, of which $17 billion was in the public market and $6 billion was unsecured. Looking at 2011, probably do about $19 to $24 billion in the public market, of which unsecured will be about $6 to $8. We've actually been very successful so far this year, and we've seen spreads really return to pre-crisis levels, and we've had very successful retail wholesale deals. We're in the process of doing a deal in Canada right now. So we feel very confident about the way that our funding plan is unfolding. Looking at liquidity, top box shows our committed capacity, which includes our unsecured credit facilities, our asset-backed, asset-backed commercial paper and lines, which is about $34.3 billion of committed capacity. Our total capacity, including cash, is about $49 billion. Now, when you back out the cash related to securitizations, our available assets, we're down to about $38 billion of liquidity, and we've only utilized about $16 billion, leaving $23 billion. All right. I think that's all I wanted to cover on Ford Credit. In total, everything that Neil took you through and I took you through, we believe that the One Ford plan is on track. We had a great 2010, both from a profit perspective, a cash perspective, and we're saying that 2000 will be better. 2011 will be better for both. We have the strongest product lineup ever. We're very excited about the global focus, the new Explorer, and all of the vehicles that we're introducing with class-leading fuel economy. We're focused on growth, not just in North America, but as you saw, around the world. We're accelerating our plans to achieve investment grade. As you know, we reduced our automotive debt by $14.5 billion last year, and we've already announced a $3 billion reduction this year, which will close at the middle to the end of the month. We're doing all this by working together as one team, and this includes Ford Credit, which continues to be a very well-run, profitable strategic asset for us. With that, we'd like to open it up to any questions you might have.
If we can ask folks to use a mic, because we are webcast testing this, so it would be helpful. I think the question, as I heard it, was what are the other metrics that we're looking at in order to get to investment grade? I think first and foremost, we have to continue to operate the business the way we have. We have to continue to generate the profits we've been generating, the positive cash flow, continue to make improvements in the balance sheet. But we are a product biz business. We've made a lot of progress from a standpoint of market share here in North America. We have to continue the strides and protect the share that we have gained. But it comes down to the business physicals and being able to continue to execute what those physicals are.
Thank you. On that question, is there something that you have internally? Is it positive net interest, or is there a debt level that maybe they've indicated that? And then, how do you balance that with CapEx? Would you increase leverage, potentially make an acquisition if it made sense?
I think the acquisition that we have to make is to continue to execute the One Ford plan globally. We have to continue to integrate. We have to continue to expand, taking our global products to all the markets that they can be in. As far as specific metrics and are there debt levels that we're looking at as being targets, I think importantly, we got to generate cash. And the three priorities for use of cash is product, growth, and the balance sheet. And those have been the three priorities. They're going to stay that way. And we're going to continue to execute the business accordingly.
And then in the third quarter, I think there was an adverse structural cost of about a couple hundred million, let me restate that, versus the third quarter guidance. And could you gave great detail on the fixed income call, and not a lot of people were on that call as much as they were on the equity call. Could you give us more detail on what drove that adverse move in the fourth quarter? And then secondly, are we going to see some of that repeat in the first half?
Yeah, I think there were really, and I think specifically, Eric, there was a, what we had said at the end of the third quarter is we expected that full year structural costs would be up about $1 billion and commodity costs would be up about $1 billion. When actuals came in, structural costs were up $1.2 billion and commodity costs were up $1 billion. So I think the 2/10 that you're talking about is the miss from a guidance perspective. And I think more broadly speaking, the growth in structural cost from a quarter, sort of sequential quarter to quarter really encompasses a couple of things. One is there's a normal seasonality in the fourth quarter because of the plant shutdowns and our production schedule that affects the fourth quarter on a cost basis almost every fourth quarter. I think the other items, and not necessarily specific to the miss of 200, because I mean this is a difficult business $200 million is a miss, but it's, you know, in the construct of the total cost base, it's a really small percentage. But it centers around our investment in growth, which is going to continue. And it's growth in North America, it's growth in Europe, it's growth in the other regions around the world, and from an engineering and manufacturing perspective. But we also had a decent amount of launches, both powertrains and finished vehicles, the Explorer being the biggest one in the fourth quarter, and that comes with it a cost base that comes to the extent of the quarter in which it gets launched, and some kinds of them the quarter afterwards as we start with the advertising spend that goes with the product launches. So it's a combination of growth, it's a combination of product launches, and normal fourth quarter seasonality.
And then just finally, we've seen, you know, oil prices spike up in the last week. Are you guys currently profitable on small vehicles here in North America?
Yes. And I think the important thing, and we go back and look at, you know, we run lots of scenarios on where oil prices could go and what we would do. If you go back to the last real oil shock that there was, which is really the second quarter of 2008, there are two main things that happened. One is the industry dropped pretty significantly. And two, there was a relatively large shift in the segment from a standpoint of large trucks and utilities to small cars. When we look back at 08 and look at what our small car lineup was, we didn't really have a great product lineup. If you look at what our small cars today, and not only small cars, but actually more fuel-efficient powertrains on the larger cars, trucks, and utilities, we're in a much better product mix position with the Fiesta and the Focus and the Fusion, both petrol and hybrid, but also more fuel-efficient powertrains on the Explorer, on the F-Series, on the Mustang, to be able to balance the portfolio in a much better way today than at the time. And if you recall, in sort of March, April of 08, it shot up from like $2 a gallon to $4 a gallon in a matter of a month. You know, so here we're already starting at a more inflated level. And so a gradual is different than any kind of a shock effect. But we're much better positioned today with our vehicle lineup to address that. Yeah, please.
As you talk about growth, can you weigh in on your strategy related to incentives? And I have a second question on Ford Credit.
As far as incentives, in, specifically in North America, or are you beyond?
North America and abroad.
Okay. The two areas where incentives play sort of the biggest role, obviously Europe has been the one that's gotten the most attention over the last year or so as government scrappage programs that were on in the 08-09 timeframe wore off, and the OEs, having not taken capacity out, were basically pushing vehicles through incentives, and that continues, and obviously we've made some choices from a standpoint of selling vehicles and where we're going to participate in that process and where we're not, and we've taken a market share hit in Europe as a result of that. We will continue to right-size our business. We will continue in Europe specifically to participate where it makes sense and not participate where it doesn't make sense from a standpoint of making money on vehicles. In North America, the incentives have escalated in the industry a little bit in January and continued into February. We're actually down on incentives versus where we were in December. That's not true for all manufacturers. I think we're going to watch and see and, again, participate where we can make money and right-size capacity to meet demand. We don't want to get into an incentive battle. The immediate effect that has on residual values at the credit company is almost immediate from a standpoint of the impact on used car prices. We've made great strides in our market share. We've made great strides in the vehicle quality that's justifying the pricing in which we have. The technology, the features and things that we're putting on the vehicles have justified the pricing. We've narrowed the gap we have with our competitors. So we're going to be really careful. And we've also seen at the Ford Credit side, the residual value performance has been very, very good. And you saw the results of that in our 2010 results. And so we're going to be really careful on how that incentive game gets played. But we think our bottom line is our products are so much better today that we don't have to play the incentive game anywhere near what we have in the past.
And regarding my question on Ford Credit, if we're in an environment where SAR is expected to continually escalate over the next couple of years, how should we think about the balance sheet capacity at Ford Credit and whether you have the capacity to deal with a higher level of originations if you're continually dividending cash to Carco?
I really hope that's a problem. So actually, you know, we've been able to make it through you know, we've been doing this for over 50 years, and we haven't had an issue with capacity. We have a lot of great partners. You know, as we said, we've got $34 billion of committed capacity. About 60% of that is set to renew this year. And we'll renew it based on what we think the market needs are, both from an overall perspective, but making sure that it exists in the markets where we need it and in the products that where we need it as well. At this stage, we don't see an issue, and we see a lot of willing partners.
Many of you in the room.
Yeah.
Yeah, please.
Hi, can you talk a little bit about the advertising costs for the car company? It seems like that's a big part of the structural costs that's gone up in the last 6 months or so. I'm just wondering, what's the dynamic there? On the outside, I don't think we see really. Are you guys trying to spend a lot more on advertising now, or is the cost per unit of advertising going up? And how do you guys think about the return on that investment that you're stepping up?
Yeah, I think the advertising is really focused on the product and the brand, which we've done a really good job in improving the overall brand awareness, which was never really an issue. But just the strength of the brand and the surveys are showing, you know, how strong in the advertising what that is. And so you get the immediate reputational benefit and brand strength benefit from what we're doing. We're doing a lot more with media. And media defined a lot differently today than it was defined, you know, 5 years ago from the standpoint of not only TV and print, but much more into digital, much more into the web and into the, I mean, just the way we launched the Explorer mid last year when we revealed it, doing it in the 9 cities, launching it in Facebook, and having it out there from a standpoint of using social media to do something that we typically have only done at auto shows. And so we essentially had 9 auto shows in one day and had like 25 million hits to the website in that day from a standpoint of the vehicle line. And so you're going to see a lot more of that. You're going to see a lot more shorter, focused feature ads. And then on top of that, we were getting a lot more what I'll call earn advertising, which is not us talking. And it's important that if you think about our ads and what you see out there is the markets wants to see what you're going to deliver, not hear what you're going to deliver. And so as opposed to us being talking heads about what we're going to do, we're relying a lot more on what others say we've done and their views on that. That being said, when we get into a vehicle launch, a heavy vehicle launch, we're going to spend more money. I think that's a reality of the business. But we're using a cross-section of media and letting also others do some of the talking for us.
Away from newspapers and into TV and digital. Is that pretty much a trend that you see? And when you look in terms of what you feel you're getting the best, the highest impact in terms of media, which area are you finding you're getting the best impact?
Actually,
he used to be his prior job was marketing and sales.
I was the controller for marketing and sales. Believe it or not, newspaper and TV are still the highest proportion. We are committing a lot more to digital as we go forward. And you've seen that in things like the Fiesta movement, the Focus Rally, the Explorer reveal. Again, our goal is to make sure that we hit the customers the way they want to be hit. So we're going to optimize all of those. We're going to use the right metrics, and we're going to spend where we see that the best value is going to be there. TV and print are not going to go away. So that's not the case. And in fact, what you need to be able to do, and I think Jim Farley's done a phenomenal job at, is coordinating all these customer touch points so that they actually build on each other. So what you're doing on a website ties into what you see in print, ties into what you see on a commercial, ties into what is happening from an earned media perspective. So I think it is a very integrated approach that our marketing teams have taken.
And it's broad customer touch points. It's broad customer touch points as well as we think about the vehicles and who the target customer is. I mean, if you think about the Fiesta and the target customer being a lot younger, than a traditional customer that would be in looking at a luxury vehicle or some other vehicle. You really have to do focused marketing. Now, in the Fiesta, and Mike mentioned the Fiesta movement, was a phenomenal program that got the Fiesta in the hands of, you know, 18 to 25-year-olds for a year to drive around the country and show their vehicle off. And so the brand and name recognition of the Fiesta was so strong before the product ever got launched.
It was as high as any participant.
And so those creative types of things we're going to continue to do, and that's a way to earn the advertising that you get as opposed to spend a lot of money to try to create that by what you're going to do.
Michael, given the asset quality of Ford Credit, and obviously it was a bastion of strength, and thankfully during the downturn, it seems like, you know, the 7x leverage seems a little low. You know, where can this go, and how fast do you see that going there?
Thanks, Eric. The we've said that the underlying credit quality of our assets would imply a leverage of about 10 to 11 to 1 managed. Yeah, this is the way we looked at it. Well, today we're at 6.7 to 1. And it's our intent that through time we'll get ourselves there. There's no intent to jump there right away, and we'll do it in a measured fashion. So I think you can look forward to seeing that. And, again, we will continually reevaluate on an annual basis what the underlying credit quality and credit risk profile of our assets are. We do have a support agreement with the parent company that says we can't exceed 11.5 to 1. Okay.
And then secondly, the $2 billion dividend, does that include the tax remittance, or is that incremental?
No.
That's incremental?
Tax would be incremental. That's just distributions.
Incremental. And then finally, you know, the economy showing some sign of progress. Is there any chance that you guys lower that FICO score a little bit? I mean, it seems like, you know, there's some subprime growth. You rely on outside parties or...
We haven't really changed our origination practices since the 2004 time period. And we have found that that consistency in the market does a couple of things. First, we do write a very wide spread of business. In fact, we finance a significant portion of all what you'd call subprime for people who buy Ford Motor Company vehicles. And it's our goal to keep those origination practices consistent through time, because you guys, as investors, expect our deals to perform consistently through time. So we owe it to you, we owe it to ourselves, we owe it to our parent, we owe it to our dealers, we owe it to our customers to continue to do this consistently.
Okay. I don't mean to belabor the point on incentives, but there's been news out there that Ford has increased incentives on the truck side of the business, partly in response to one of your competitors doing so. Is that so?
I'll be honest. I don't have the specifics on the vehicle line per se. I know our incentives are down in total from December levels, but we're going to stay competitive. We're going to do what's right for the business. We're not going to match everywhere, but there are places where we will match.
Okay. And I wouldn't say we'd necessarily match. Sometimes you have to respond.
Respond is a better word.
But respond, you know, doesn't necessarily mean. We have a very clear view of what's been able to drive our residuals higher, and we're not going to, in essence, bastardize that. We'll do what it takes to be competitive in the marketplace, but that doesn't necessarily mean we need to be playing down here all the time.
Thank and you. Importantly, we think we have the best product lineup out there.
Yep.
And that goes on the F-Series is across the board. I mean, we have the new fuel, the new powertrains that get the great performance but better fuel economy. And we're not gonna, you know, basically sacrifice some of the attributes that we're putting in that consumers want and value to do that. So I think, you know, respond is a much better word than match. So I apologize for that.
Okay. Thank you.
As we kind of see production start to ramp back up, particularly going into 2011 and sales continue to improve, can you talk a little bit about your relationships with some of your suppliers and, in your view, how well they've been responding and kind of how that relationship has been kind of working together to meet the overall increase in demand?
Yeah, I think one of the things that what I said earlier on the overall working together and the suppliers themselves is we've moved from bottom of the list on supplier relationships to the top of the list. And I think what that brings with it is a much more working together kind of relationship. And that goes as far as, you know, them bringing technology to us. If they see things that they think we can improve on, they bring it to us. We do the same to them. It's much more collaborative. They're putting capital into places where they're going to generate the most revenue and the most profits, and if the relationship brings that with them, they can bring that to Ford, and we can do it the other way. As far as growth and what that means to the supply base, and clearly a lot of them went through restructurings and took out a lot of capacity, so how fast the growth comes back will depend on how constrained the pipeline is from the standpoint of the supply base. And we'll just have to work through however that comes out from a standpoint. If the growth accelerates too fast, you know, there's obviously going to be places in the supply chain that we'll have to work through. But they've got their cost structure down in a very significant way through the restructurings that the industry had done in 08 in 09. So the speed of growth becomes an important issue. Okay, if there's no more questions, we'll end a little early. Thank you.